This is .NET Cast with hosts Mark Baker and Nick Hemdahl.
Sign up for the SD Expo mailing list to receive conference updates and the 2006 conference catalog. Go to www.sdexpo.com.
And now introducing your host for .NET Cast, Mark Baker.
Welcome to .NET Cast. I'm your host, Mark Baker. Thanks for joining us again. With me tonight is my co-host, Nick Hemdahl. Hey, Nick.
Hey, Mark. We're going to have another great show tonight on .NET. And don't forget, you can always find us on the web at www.ddj.com/podcast/.NET Cast/.
In this episode, I start out by asking Microsoft Patterns and Practices development lead, Peter Provost, about the relationship between interface-based development and multi-module CAD projects. So if you've got, a multi-module project and you've got, let's say, several foundational modules or assemblies that you're using, maybe .NET assemblies, and you've got objects within them, where do you guys come down on the issue of like interface-driven development, where you might centralize all your interfaces in a particular module that, or assembly, let's say, that they all reference versus not doing that? I mean, because I guess the issue is if you've got services and whatnot, different things, entities exposed from modules, is how you actually access those things without a reference to the assembly, which you kind of don't want to do if they're modules.
Yeah, I guess mostly what I will be expressing here is a personal opinion.
Yeah, that's fine.
not a you guys. My personal opinion has always been to tend towards the idea of good interface definition for these kinds of classes, for these kinds of objects. And I do like to keep my interfaces separate from my implementation. I come from a test-driven development background, and so I have a tendency to want to be able to replace objects.
Right.
One of the values actually of this dependency injection approach is that it makes objects very decoupled and easy to test. And so if you take a dependency on an interface, that helps. Now, do I take all of the interfaces for all of the world and put them in one assembly? Probably not. I find that actually leads me just as badly to the versioning problem as not doing that. So typically what I'll do is I'll kind of aim in the general direction of dividing up my world into well-defined spaces and try to put my interfaces for a particular space together. And so if I have to make changes to what customer means,
right,
if I really do have to change the definition of customer inside our enterprise, that's probably a pretty serious change to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my approaches are going to be the classic ones. I can create iCustomer 2, or I can change iCustomer and get everybody to recompile. There's not really much better than that in statically typed languages. Now, if we had that wrapped up in the same assembly, that interface, as the one that we use for some other kind of services, then the fact that I change that other service means everybody has to update as well. So I try to partition my problem space such that I can be thinking about that maintenance burden in the future. Right? That's
right.
Really the goal here in my mind, is to try to make it so that I can look where I'm most likely to need to change things.
Right.
And divide to best enable that.
I want to touch on something that you're talking about, TDD there. I think there was a blog post you had about quotes from the CAB war room. And I think one of the funny things is, you know, bend the team to my TDD will. can you explain? Are you hardcore TDD? I mean, what are you guys actually doing as far as that goes on in PNP?
We want the truth here, too.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I don't mind being honest here. Each project generally makes its own decisions on that stuff, but on projects that I'm the lead, we do TDD. My experience has been that once developers learn it, they don't go back.
Yeah.
And if they work with somebody who knows it well, and we're lucky enough to have some of those people here on my team, they learn it quickly. And so by pairing up with people who have the experience to deal with some of the challenges you come across doing TDD, these people will learn to do it, and they learn the benefits of it. And I get, as a development lead who's responsible for the code, I get code that is much easier for me to test, to read, to understand. It's decoupled. It's more reusable. So I get all those wins as a dev lead. So I'm going to push for it always. But not all of our project teams do. Most of them are pretty aggressive unit testers, and we have a tendency towards a very strong agile bent in the way we get our work done.
Yeah.
So, are you guys doing XP as well? I mean.
Well, yeah. Before joining Microsoft, I was an XP coach, so that just kind of flows out of me.
Ah, okay.
In fact, on the Smart Client Software Factory team, we're doing XP to the all the point of index cards on the wall.
Okay.
Because it's what works for that team. Some teams use the tooling. We'll use Visual Studio, a Team Foundation server, and maybe the Agile template or the Conchango Scrum template and things like that. But each team makes its own decisions based on their needs, and sometimes those needs are influenced by, is the whole team physically present? Is part of the team overseas? How often do they get together? How do we need to communicate with them? Those things influence very strongly how you choose to implement these processes. So we have to be a little agile even in process selection.
It's actually, just to talk about that a bit more, is that somebody really advocates TDD and unit testing in general. How do you balance the trade-offs of developing, let's say, unit tests from a robustness standpoint of having, really, really minutiae tests that test absolutely everything versus having projects run on a schedule and having to actually deliver software at a specific date and time? I mean, how do you trade those two off as a dev lead, dev manager?
Sure. Well, we are in the interesting position here inside of Patterns and Practices where we ship source code.
Right.
And because we ship source code, the requirements that we have on the quality of that code and on the readability and understandability of that code is much higher than if we only shipped binaries.
Mm.
And so having, an exhaustive suite of unit tests like we do in CAB or Enterprise Library is very important from a testing standpoint. It's very important from a design standpoint because it encourages the developers to create decoupled code, which means we're happier about shipping that code. My experience is that over time, developers will produce at least as much production code doing TDD as not.
Mm.
There is unquestionably a tax at the beginning. When a developer is first learning this, they slow down. And when you hit hard problems, you slow down. But honestly, when you hit hard problems, you should probably slow down. So the other thing that you have to understand about doing TDD and about doing aggressive unit testing like this is that you're acknowledging that that work has to be done and you're doing it in advance of the programming.
Right, right.
If you leave it off, what happens is you just push that off to the maintenance phase of the project or
right.
to the bug fixing phase.
Right.
And I would rather be at the end of a project with that deadline looming, knowing that all the code we wrote is of very high quality and that we made educated, conscious decisions about what scope to exclude in order to make a date, than saying all scope is in, but some of it's not very good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably true, isn't it? When you get to the end of a project and you think, well, I'll do my unit tests after I'm done, you typically don't. And you usually are at that point, the product managers or program managers in your group are probably already looking at the next features that they want to develop. And they're not looking at, well, let's spend another chunk of money to go back and build unit tests for things we've already completed and maybe tested or shipped or whatnot. That they're all looking to the future. So if you don't do it as you go, you probably don't do it at all.
If you've shipped it, you're certainly not. You're going to have a very difficult time justifying going and writing unit tests for it.
Yeah,
it's an interesting challenge. As I said, I think of TDD as primarily a design methodology that has the added benefit of letting me end with a very strong suite of unit tests.
Hmm. Well, let's step back for a second, and one of the things we touched on earlier, we were talking about interfaces and intermodule communication was. We briefly touched on services and work items a little bit. And one of the things that struck me in looking at services and work items is sort of the tension between the idea of having, let's say, functionality exposed from a module via a service versus having that functionality exposed from an object that's stored in the root work item or some other work item that module is providing. And so what's the guidance there on resolving that issue of when you have functionality that's in a module that needs to be exposed to other modules, whether you consider using something like a service or you consider using something like a root work item to store that?
Well, even if you're going to do it as a service, you'll probably put it as a service in a work item.
Right.
So, you know, the way we like to say it is something like this. If we have an object that really is, or a class, that really is providing services globally to everybody, typically what we'll do is we'll say that that module should install that service into the root work item as a service to make it available to all of the work items and all of the classes in the application. So that means then that if they know its interface and they ask for it by interface type, they'll get that particular concrete instance. Now, sometimes what happens, though, is a module will load in kind of ahead of another one in kind of a hierarchical relationship because work items can be nested. And so this allows you to basically replace services or add new services within the scope that is defined by your work item. So we can imagine that the root work item comes in and it has these five services installed, maybe four of which are the standard cab ones and one new one that either your shell or a foundational module installs. Second module comes in and installs a child work item. So a child work item, if it's absolutely empty, will still have addressable within it all of the works, all of the services of its parent. Now, those services can be replaced at this level. So we may say that of those four services plugged in at the root, service B has a different implementation from here down. So what that means is objects within this local smaller container will get the new implementation of that authentication service.
Right.
But classes and objects elsewhere in the application that are not within this local container, they'll get the implementation provided at the root. So understanding that really helps people see when and where to start partitioning work items and how to install services, because services become one of those scoping, pluggable replaceability points that allow your app to change its behavior.
So you really can create like proxy points, right, within a module where you might have some baseline services provided by the shell or by other modules. And in a particular module, you go, you know, I really don't like the way that service works. I want to override the behavior essentially within my module and still expose it as a service, but make my module or my work items within my module use an alternative implementation of that service.
Yes, absolutely. Your work items and the classes that are collaborating together within that work item to get work done.
Right. Now, that's actually, you know, another, I guess, a key point with the idea behind work items is this whole notion of nested work items and actually breaking, within a module, breaking work items into, you know, sets or hierarchies of related work items. What are some examples of where you might want to do that within a module? Is it really tied to the notion of multiple views, or is there some other sort of classic segmentation of when you go, well, I got another work item here, I really need to break this down, or I need to create a parent work item and create child work items that are sitting underneath it to manage these, you know, segments of my use cases or whatnot?
Yeah, so early on in the life cycle of CAB, our intent and our thinking was that a work item represented a use case. And so we kind of thought that, well, if we were to do a use case analysis of our application, then, you know, we'll have 16 use cases. That means we'll have 16 work items.
Right.
Well, what has happened over time is as we've evolved it and as we've worked with the community to explore and build more apps on this, is we've discovered that that might actually be a little bit too aggressive.
Well, that's all for this episode of .NET Cast. Send us an email at .netcast@sunburstsoftware.com and let us know what you think of the show. Take care, everybody.
The opinions expressed on .netcast are solely those of the participants and not necessarily those of its sponsors or CMP Media, its partners or employees. .netcast is a CMP DevNet podcast and is produced by Sunburst Software at sunburstsoftware.com. Additional production support has been provided by Digital Context at digitalcontext.com. CMP DevNet is solely responsible for the content of .netcast.
Sign up for the SD Expo mailing list to receive conference updates and the 2006 conference catalog. Go to www.sdexpo.com.